This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Pie in the Sky Media. This series contains adult language and descriptions of graphic violence throughout. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Criminal Mischief with Carolyn and Brandon. You're listening to episode 73, The Cabin in the Woods. Some people, like me, go to the woods near their home for a jog, a hike. It's just a really simple pleasure, a place to inhale and then exhale. What a way to decompress. Get some of that toxic noise out of your head for a bit. For many, exploring the wilderness means you're out in the woods, but you're staying on the trail. And if you inadvertently get off the main path for some reason, you don't have to worry about leaving gingerbread crumbs behind to help you find your way back to the trailhead, because generally, if you're close enough to the city, there are usually enough of those little dog poo bags that have been temporarily left on the trail to guide you back to your vehicle. Which is all to say, you're in the woods, but you're still close to civilization. You're not in the wild, which is a completely different thing.
My name is CJ Jones.
You worked for the DNR, which is?
Correct, the Washington Department of Natural Resources.
And what did you do? What was your job?
So I had two different jobs in my time there. Both of them were related. I started working on the Olympic Peninsula as what they call like a education and enforcement trail steward. So doing basic low-level law enforcement work for the DNR, sort of like a ranger. And I did something similar as well in North Bend, which was my second position there. But I was had a little bit more responsibilities.
CJ mentions that he worked for the Olympic National Forest near Port Angeles, which is about 2 hours away from Seattle.
You know, and that was one thing, too, I really enjoyed coming from the Olympic Peninsula. And, you know, the Olympic Peninsula is a wonderful place. It will always be close to my heart. But the Olympic Peninsula is very wild. And you never know when you go down a road, you turn that corner, you never know what you're going to meet, right?
People or animals?
People.
Or both? Oh, people?
You know, animals, you know, bears and stuff, you know, whatever. But people are what really scare you. And I always had those. But so when I came to North Bend in the Snoqualmie District, I was really happy because a lot of the issues I experienced, sort of lawlessness of a lot of forest, open forest land in the state, wasn't an issue here.
So when CJ transferred to the Snoqualmie Valley at the end of 2015, he was pretty much an expert on the ways of the wild.
You don't have cell phone reception. You kind of have to hope for the best.
So are you going in there without a weapon?
Correct.
And you're like a ranger.
Correct.
That's got to be really, really scary. What are you going to do if something gets crazy?
You know, when I was on the peninsula, I was fresh out of college. Looking back at it, I had interactions that I should have definitely never had with folks. You know, you really have to be good about communicating with people. You have to be good about defusing situations. Because you never know, some people, they're high on meth, you know, heroin. They have mental issues, disabilities. They're living rough on the land. They're seeing you in a uniform roll up and, you know, talking to them, you never know what you're going to come into.
Yeah.
So that's something I did not miss.
The Snoqualmie Forest is roughly an hour away from Seattle. And with a booming population, it's an ideal place for urban dwellers to get a taste of nature.
It's probably the closest access point to wilderness from Seattle you can get. Traditionally, or it has been for many years, was the Middle Fork of Snoqualmie was known as a very rough and tumble place. It was, you know, if you've been on a lot of roads out here in the Northwest on Forest Service land or DNR land, you know, Forest Service roads or forest roads in general are not very well don't always have the highest level of maintenance, let me put it that way. So they're known for being very, you have to drive very slow, otherwise you bottom out your vehicle. And so it makes it a little more hard to get to. And the Middle Fork was known as a place where, in the past, a lot of crime happened.
Because it was so far out?
It was both close and far, right? Because, like I said, it's one of the closest areas on the I-90 corridor getting out of Seattle. You can get to Woods. The Middle Fork was known as a kind of a lawless place. And there are a lot of stories about it going when I started working there. It was a place where meth labs were, shops, you know, people live out there. If you stole a vehicle and wanted to take all this, you know, the useful parts from it and burn up the rest in the middle of the road, Middle Fork was the place to go. I ran into that in the Olympic Peninsula, too. Anywhere you have open roads, you know, roads that aren't gated, especially close to cities of any kind, any size, you know, my previous case was Port Angeles, you know, you're going to run into that kind of thing. So what happened was there was an initiative started, I believe, in the 90s, to raise awareness about the Middle Fork in particular by some environmental groups around this area. This is an area where you're going to find close access to old growth trees, you know, the big giants, and which also plays into this story. So the road, still a big chunk of it is not paved, but there was an initiative to sort of clean up the valley, really worked with local folks to, I can't remember how many, it was 150 cars they got out of the valley.
Just like abandoned, dilapidated cars that were just dumped there?
Yeah, exactly. The cleanup effort was monumental, and they were able to get federal funding to pave the road. So when I first started working in North Bend, I was there about a year or so before the paving began. So I got to see it how it used to be. But the road was really in terrible shape. You know, with the paving, you know, the DNR and the Forest Service improving the trails there, making it nice, making it, I always heard that it was to be park-like. It was to be like a national park. Because they understood that with the amount of people growing, you know, this region is growing quickly. So the amount of people who are wanting to go to the woods is also growing. So if you have an easily accessible area where they are not going to be able to impact the land, they're not going to be dumping their garbage, it looks well-kept, people are also going to keep it well-kept. You know, you're going to get the good people in and sort of the bad folks out.
And for context, the Snoqualmie Valley is near Tiger Mountain, where serial killer Ted Bundy brought victims, and it's alleged that Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, could have at least one victim in Snoqualmie that has never been found.
This is the area where Ted Bundy, you know, further close to civilization, but Ted Bundy did dump some of his bodies in this general area, Tiger Mountain being one of those areas, Highway 18. So, once again, it's because of that close proximity to Seattle. It's the first wild place after you leave Issaquah, basically, right? You're beyond Issaquah, you feel like you're in the wilderness, whether you are or not, and people will go off and do things. You know, while I worked there, I never found any bodies, but we had a few searches where people did. And, you know, Mount Si being one, there's a missing persons case up there, they found a person who had been shot in the head sometime in the 90s. Who died up in the mountain, wasn't found until a few years ago. They still have no idea who he was. People perceive it as being wild, so they treat it as such.
So, as CJ takes on his new position around the Middle Fork of Snoqualmie Valley, he makes the rounds, starts talking with folks in the community. You know, people love to talk, and he starts hearing some intriguing rumors about a secret ferry cabin tucked away deep in the woods.
You had to be in the know about some of these things, and they knew about some of these little quirky sort of legends, I guess, of the Middle Fork. I don't know how else to say.
No, I think that's a perfect way. Like, so this is a great transition into, you heard about this fairy gingerbread house.
There's a good friend of mine who lives in the valley there. He's been there for years, and he saw the wildness, and he saw what it is now, and he's seen that big transition over several decades. And it may have been from him at first, but I heard it in conjunction with a couple other stories. You know, there are several cabins in the valley, in the Middle Fork. One of them looked like a... Now, this one I've never seen, but one of them, I was told, looked like it had a bunch of boxes stacked up inside, and maybe somebody was using it, because there's mining that goes. There's still some mining claims up the valley operated by the Forest Service. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That's a common thing. People thought, oh, maybe it's like a miner shack where people are storing stuff for mining. You know, they don't have to bring it in and out all the time. And then there was the ferry cabin. In the ferry cabin, what I had heard about it was that it was kind of strange building. People I had spoken to hadn't seen it in a few years. They hadn't been there in a few years. When they had been there, they told me that it was, you know, you open up the door and inside there's, you know, scantily clad pictures of drawings of fairies. And it's sort of sexualized images and that kind of thing. You know, kind of weird. And there's sort of occult symbols all around and things like that and building.
Like cult meaning what? Like Celtic or like, or like, I mean, I'm thinking of like what goes with fairies, you know?
Yeah,
like
I think
runes or something or.
Yeah. So what I had heard was that it was a cult.
Okay. So you have all this wilderness out there and some of it is owned by the Forest Service and some of it, the DNR. So in talking to all these people, getting the lay of the land, he finds out that the Forest Service had actually been made aware of the existence of this ferry cabin years before, but their records didn't show that they knew its precise location.
We wanted to find where exactly it was because we knew that it was also near a grove of old growth trees. It was very environmentally sensitive. And we also knew that with the pavement coming, access would be increased. It'd be much easier for people to get up there. And we didn't want there to be these sort of cabins and other things close to the roads or whatever for people to start going to, for people to explore and find, and also for people to think it's okay to do this themselves. So I wanted to know where this was to ultimately see it destroyed.
Okay. So it wasn't so much a curiosity that you'd heard it, but that you were like, this is my job to protect the forest and to do my part in getting this out of here.
Right. And it got a little tricky because it was on Forest Service land. So, you know, being state DNR, it was outside my jurisdiction. But with this sort of collaborative approach, I wanted to know exactly where it was. I wanted to find it. I wanted to take GPS coordinates of it and ultimately see it through some form gotten rid of.
Okay.
And also it was a curiosity thing because what I had heard about it seemed very strange, right?
Yeah. I have to think. I mean, I know you have to be, I feel like you have to be a little bit careful, but because you were curious. Like,
absolutely.
I would be curious.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a very curious thing. You know, and that's another thing about when you work in the woods, especially out here. And not in wilderness, you know, wilderness is a lot of places out here is pristine. Where you're in that sort of in between area, like in Forest Service land or DNR land, where there's roads, people interact there and have for many years, you find strange things. And you run into strange people. This was another interesting thing to go find.
CJ invites some friends to help him on his quest to find this cabin in the woods.
A couple environmentalist friends I was going on doing this with, we were all sworn to secrecy. That because of the nature of us trying to find this thing, we would not tell anyone else about it. It was already something you had to be in the know about. Nobody just knew. It wasn't widely known that this thing was there, that this cabin was there. So I went to one of my friends who lives in the valley, and asked him sort of like, hey, you know, we've talked about this before. You said that you have pictures of this from the last time you were there about 3 years ago. And he said, oh, yeah, absolutely. I have pictures. I even took a point in a map of where it is. I said, perfect. Where is it? He searched and searched and searched and searched and couldn't find it. And this is a guy who keeps very detailed records of everything. And for some reason, he could not find the pictures of this place.
Why do you think that is? Did he not want you to find it? Or
no,
what?
No, I don't think it was anything sinister like that. I think he was... That's what makes it kind of weird, is that we really tried hard to figure out where these pictures were, where this image of the map was. He couldn't find it in his records. I was just dumbfounded.
There was no way that CJ was giving up on this environmental quest, which, let's face it, he was curious. He had to find this cabin.
So in a lot of landscapes like this, you'll get people who are, for whatever reason, very invested in it. And they like to keep an eye on it. Volunteers.
Keep an eye on what?
Keep an eye on everything. Making sure anything strange, anything illegal, anything bizarre. For some reason.
But how can they keep an eye on, like, acres and acres of deep, forested woods?
People do it. And I can guarantee you, any landscape you go out here, you're going to find at least one person like that. Who is deeply invested in that place.
Yeah, my neighbor over here.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, but it's like hard to believe that somebody could monitor
on their own citizen way, they will go out and keep an eye on things because they feel like it's their duty to do so.
Is that do you think that's a good thing, or what do you think?
I think it's a very good thing, because when you're talking about large landscapes, right? And so when you have somebody who knows the area like better than I do, who's been there for 40 years or whatever, and they keep an eye on things, they've seen a change, they've seen patterns, it's very good to have those people in the landscape. And a lot of times land management agencies will use them to help, you know, keep things going. They'll cut down trees out of roads, that sort of thing. So they can be troublesome, don't get me wrong, but for the most part I think it's a very good thing. But anyways, some of the people who were keeping an eye on the Middle Fork noticed that at one of these unofficial trailheads, this vehicle kept showing up every weekend. Every weekend this vehicle showed up, and they took notes of the type of vehicle, its license plate, everything. And they thought, well, this is kind of strange. Then afterwards, I don't know who found it and when, but they noticed that this cabin had appeared in the woods, sort of about a mile and a half or so away from where this vehicle was parked. So they believe that there was a connection.
So CJ meets up with his buddies at the trailhead where that vehicle had been known to park over the last 8 years, and he was pretty confident that they would find it, based on all of his experience in the woods, and that the area that they would be looking for the cabin was about a 2 mile trek.
Based on the descriptions of it, and a lot of other cabins like this on Forest Service land out there, they tend to be pretty rustic. They tend to be sort of milled on site with materials you'll find nearby. You're not going to bring in a bunch of stuff and build the cabin from stuff you get at, you know, Ace Hardware.
Yeah.
Typically, anyways. And so they're typically pretty rustic. That's what I was expecting and finding. It's a sort of roughly hewn cabin in the woods. And, you know, that would be what I'm looking for. So anyways, I started going out. I went out first time with two of my environmentalist friends, who we were all sworn to secrecy, and we went out and based on the description of generally where this was, we went and looked for it.
I wouldn't go so far as calling CJ cocky, but he had an earned confidence of being able to find human activity in the woods based on his experience tracking down wood poachers in the Olympic National Forest. And he planned to put these skills into practice to help him find the cabin.
You know, in my previous job in the Olympic Peninsula, one thing I did a lot of, I took very personally, which is a whole other story, is wood theft. So people cutting down trees illegally.
Yeah.
Using it for soundwood, tiger grain, the maple, cedar, that kind of stuff. Happened all the time. I took it very personally. I got very good at being able to tell where people have gone. So I wouldn't say I'm like a tracker or anything, but you could tell a person trail, right? I can tell where people have gone versus an animal.
Yeah.
And so, because I went through the woods on the Olympic Peninsula, you know, setting up cameras, trying to catch people doing that sort of illegal activity, mm-hmm. right? So my thought was, okay, this is off of a main trail, an established trail. No problem. I know it's to the south of it. I will just parallel the trail, kind of zigzag my way through from, you know, it's not a huge distance, mile and a half or so or along this trail before it.
So there was a trail.
Yes, there's a main trail off of it. I figured, well, I can just zigzag to the side of the main trail, look for where somebody for the past 8 years has been going down the embankment here. It's going to be a pretty obvious person trail. It's going to be pretty clearly put in the ground.
Yeah.
Humans impact the ground very heavily, more so than other animals. Especially, like I said, if somebody's been going in and out there for 8 years, it's going to be a pretty clear path. I said, no problem, I'll figure this out, no issue. So
you went in there a little bit cocky, thinking,
well, I was like, yeah, no issue at all. So the area is, you know, it's deep woods. And so I would never forget, I was a little bit off the trail there and with my buddies, and I came across very clear trail. I said, this is a person trail, this is it. And I thought, wow, you know, I must have missed it where it went off the main trail, but here it is. And so I followed it for a little while, and it kind of veered off down the hillside into the ground cover was big sword fern, which is, you know, can deal with impact pretty heavily. It's a lot tougher plant, and it covers up stuff much easier. Mm-hmm. So I lost the trail there. I thought, oh, darn.
Coming up empty that day, it stung a bit, but CJ was undeterred. He knew he'd find it the next time.
is that, once again, it's not a huge area. I can come back and look again.
So how? When was the next time that you went back?
I couldn't remember. I couldn't tell you. It was during that summer of 2016.
So it was like during the summer you went back again.
Yeah, I went back, I think, a total of 4 times. Anytime that I was in the valley and I had some time to kill, I would just swing onto Forest Service land. And the trail that it's on goes between Forest Service and DNR. So I figured, well, you know, this is a shared trail. It's a good idea to know what's on the trail anyways.
Yeah.
And so I went and sort of combed the woods.
Did you go by yourself?
Most of the time, yes. And then one of my friends went a couple times on his own looking as well. And found some really, really cool areas in there. But no sign of people trails, no sign of humans going off in the woods on a regular basis, none of that. I remember going out there and it was a nice day, and I covered the last bit of ground that made sense based on the description of this thing. And I thought, I don't know where it is.
So you were by yourself?
Yeah, I was by myself. So I went, at the end of the day, it was the end of the day, I went up to where my other friend lived, the friend who had the photos. I said, okay, I'm not leaving your house until you find the photos. We are going through all of your records. We're going to find them. We have to. And I told him, you know, I'm just so you know, I'm looking for it. I want to find it. So I'm not leaving here until you show me those photos that you have. And it took him a while, but I found them.
All of CJ's meticulous treks to find the ferry cabin had all taken place over the summer. And he knew with winter coming, there wasn't a lot of time left to find it.
Now, I told you, when I first thought of what I was looking for with this cabin, I thought it was going to be roughly hewn, you know, stuff on the ground that had been sort of milled on site and slapped together. A lot of cabins are like that. But this one was a lot different. It was pretty clear when you look at it that it was built off site and taken in and constructed there piece by piece.
Oh, you think this was built off site?
It absolutely was. All the material there was made off site and brought in. None of that is local material. None of it. So somebody had been there.
That was the 8 years ago, the truck. Yeah. So they'd build like one side of it, bring it in. The next week they'd build another side of it,
bring in the materials, build up, you know, they pre.
So this is a coordinated effort.
Absolutely it was.
Okay, yeah. You're at your friend's house, you get the pictures. And when you saw those pictures, what were you like? Were you just like...
I was blown away because they were not they were not at all what I was expecting.
And so then that day, did you go out there again?
No, I rallied the troops. So this had to have been in November of 2016, because the next time I called them, I don't know if it was the same day or not. And I said, hey, he wasn't the exact coordinates of the position, but he had a picture of a map that had the point on it where it was at. So I put it on my GPS and said, okay, roughly it's here. I have a really close location of where it's at now. I know what it looks like. And I called my friends, the same two friends who went out the first time, and said, hey guys, when are you guys available next? Let's go looking for it. I have the location.
Did you call them because you wanted to share that with them, or did you call them because you were a little bit spooked and didn't want to go there by yourself,
It's never a good idea to go looking for anything like that by yourself.
And with all the care that the person obviously took to bring it in, it's obviously very precious to that person. Did you have a new kind of sense of who this person was after you saw those photos?
I don't know about sense of the person, but it definitely blew me away. It was unlike any other cabin like that I've ever seen before, where somebody, like I said, clearly, you know, you look at the images of this, right, and they're out there for people listening, I guess. All of this was built off-site, clearly fabricated off-site and brought in piece by piece.
Yeah.
He probably did repairs over the years, piece by piece. And it's not exactly it's not super difficult about going to this place, but certainly hauling all this timber and everything else, it wouldn't have been easy. And especially down some of the steep embankments and everything
else. Could he have done it by him? Could the person have done it by themselves?
I don't believe so. I think it'd be, well, you know, it's not impossible, but I think that my guess is they probably did it with someone else.
Now, Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Which means you can track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. You're connecting with customers in line and online. Shopify is also all about driving store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And Shopify makes it so easy to get the hardware you need that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/mischief. That's M-I-S-C-H-I-E-F, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/mischief to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/mischief.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
For the sixth time, CJ went out with his friends to search for that cabin. But now, he had an advantage. He had rough coordinates.
I was very excited. It was my birthday, November 18th, 2016. I believe I turned 28 at the time. And I figured, what a wonderful birthday present. I can finally find the cabin that I've been searching several months for in my spare time here. And actually see where it is. You know, I can put an end to that quest, you know, that little chapter of everything, right? Great. I can find the cabin. We can have lunch there, you know, look around. It'd be kind of weird, whatever. But mission accomplished, right?
Yeah.
So I remember I was pretty excited. We had a very good idea of where it was located. And so we spread out in the woods. And I was just going, you know, I had my GPS out and I was going, oh, maybe it's right here. Oh, what about this ridge over here? And I'd run over to that and look around. Oh, no, no. And look at, and constantly be looking at my phone. I was very hyped up.
Yeah.
It was exciting. And so I got a little bit further away from my two friends to the point where you can't just say, hey, over here. You know, it's a little too far away for that. So I heard one of my friends, because like I said, you couldn't say anything to each other when you're that far away.
Yeah.
You just yelled, just like, ah. And I thought, okay. I knew exactly what it was. So me all excited, I was really excited now.
Yeah.
I put my phone in my pocket and I'm running. By the way, I have a bad knee. I can't run. So I was running, not only down these hills and through over these creeks and everything else, through Devil's Club, and, you know, all these other, you know, thorny plants, just throwing them aside, no big deal, you know, adrenaline's going. I am just super happy. And so I get there and I go to the site. And, you know, there it is. And it's because of the coloration of the cabin, and it's among some younger trees, mm-hmm. It kind of hides.
So we're looking at this photo, and basically what's interesting and something that I read that you were, an interview that you were in, that it's tar paper. Like, I didn't even realize that it was tar paper until I read that.
Right. And
I was
like, you look at it really closely.
You look at it, and it's on a platform, and it's this tiny little gingerbread cottage with the what would you say those like those tiles are like that jagged pattern
you mean
what do you
the,
call that like
I don't
the
know,
siding the, like yeah, yeah that like clearly somebody's
like
painted like
shingles
but it looks it gives that impression that it is like some kind of gingerbread cottage so you see this and it is the color of trees it is a brown
it's a dark
brown and it's on a platform what did you see when that came when you saw that
Were oh my gosh like, here it is right here okay. it is
The cabin appeared almost completely camouflaged within the wilderness, near these huge old-growth cedars covered with hanging moss.
So I wanted to be the first one in.
Of course.
Absolutely. I wanted to be the first one inside.
Yeah.
So you can see, can see here. Oh yeah. So just to give you a paint you a picture, there's a sort of the platform it's on is walkable all the way around.
Oh, so it's like a deck.
Yeah, it's a total deck. And on one side here, you can climb up on both sides of little ladders. In fact, there's a little trap door here that you climb up under. You open it up, you go up into it. And on the deck, there's a chair and also a grill. And okay. So whoever was there would be, when he visited, he'd be cooking outside.
The little ferry cabin looked like it was built for kids. A sweet little house, elevated off the forest floor, on 8-foot stilts. CJ and his friends walked around the perimeter. It looked like a little gingerbread house. It even had precisely cut shingles to mirror frosting. There was a wraparound porch, a pitched roof, little windows, and a door that was only accessible by a wooden ladder. After all this time searching for the cabin, CJ wasn't sure what he was expecting to find, but he felt exhilarated. He started to climb up the ladder, step by step, and suddenly he was at the door. After months of effort and trekking around the woods searching, the time had finally come to go inside. He pushed open the door.
So I threw open the door, and that's when I first saw it all. It was all built up inside. There was a bed, you know, with a sleeping bag and I think another sheet. And there was storage underneath it with a curtain over it. At the far end, there's a table with a notebook, a few books, one of which is a really nice version of The Hobbit, and some like little fantasy books and things. On the right-hand side, closest to me, there was another table with a mirror and a pentagram and some other, some candles. And then you had a keyboard, like an electronic keyboard there with a little seat. And then you had on the far end a little bit more storage.
When did it start feeling creepy?
Immediately, because when I opened it up, the first thing I saw standing across from me at the cabin was a naked child. And it was the shock sort of set in.
What were you expecting to find?
I was expecting to find, and it was there, beyond the illegal material, was the pictures of the fairies. Those were in there. It sort of took on a more sinister tone when you think about it, right? When you have... I don't know how to describe it. But when you have, sexualized fairies, that are meant to be almost childlike.
Were they outside or were they inside?
They were inside. They were in inside. Pictures, lots of pictures. And there were 6 or 8 pictures of also these naked children framed behind glass, hung in the walls. And I remember thinking, suddenly it all just, it was shocking. It was absolutely shocking. When you think you're going to find something a certain way and it's just totally different. People look for stuff for all kinds of reasons, right? And I went in looking into this, expecting something kind of whimsical and weird and something that ultimately later on I could get rid of. And now I was looking at it and saying, oh my God, this is a crime scene. This is full of illicit material. And I was just in absolute shock. I couldn't believe it. And one of my friends who has daughters, he was like, I can't go in there. I can't go in there, man. I can't do it. And the other friend was like, let's not even get the cops involved. Let's just burn it to the ground. Let's get rid of it. Let's cleanse this place of this thing. I said, no, I can't let this go. I can't. I cannot do it. And, so we kind of looked around inside, me and the one friend who was able to go in. And sort of in the far table there, I kind of looked through the journal just to see if there was anything in there. No. There was, the book, but then there was also a little packet. Something you would get. I don't want to say it was Walgreens, but it was something like that where you get pictures printed somewhere. It's one of those little like photo packets. And I opened that up and there was pictures of the fairies. The weird, but nothing really sinister about those, but then also pictures of the naked girls. So whoever, he printed them somewhere together.
So you figured this is evidence that could lead to...
Sure.
Is that what you were thinking at the time?
Yeah, I thought, okay, yeah. Well, this is interesting. They printed it out somewhere. So I left it there, and we got out of Dodge.
Finding out what was in the cabin was devastating for CJ and his friends. The previously jovial mood of just finding the place after searching for so long had been replaced with an unshakable darkness. It was quiet as they began their trek out of the woods once again. However, CJ made sure to mark a place, so he would know where to find it again.
Now, this was a Friday, if I remember, because when I got back, it was towards the end of the day, when we got out of the forest, which took a while still, which I was able to backtrack because we had the trail at that point. I was able to figure out exactly where he kept going down off the main trail to the cabin. I made a little little symbol that I could tell where it was. So for future reference, I'd be able to easily find it.
But so that he wouldn't know that. It was something that...
Yeah, I would be able... I knew it was there. I mean, if you're looking at it, you'd be like, oh, well, that's kind of weird. I just, you know, stuff with sticks, you know. It was what I... It was for me. And as far as I know, it was never messed with. So I don't know if anybody ever noticed it or not. But I made my little mark, and we left. And it was at the end of the day. And I knew, you know, in the wintertime, the Forest Service office was closed on a Friday. Nobody would be in there until Monday. I thought, my God, who do we contact? Who do we call for something like this? And so I went up sort of my own chain of command at the DNR, and they were like, well, thanks for letting us know, but this isn't our jurisdiction. There's nothing really we can do.
Because it was Forest Service land.
Right. But I made my due diligence and let, you know, our LEOs know, and... There's nothing could be done.
In that moment, he was still trying to process everything. He didn't know what he was going to do, but he knew there was no way he was going to just let this go. So CJ and his friends had found the cabin Friday afternoon. And by that evening, he's informing his boss, who basically says there's nothing we can do because it's Forest Service land. Remember, CJ worked for the Department of Natural Resources, which is a different agency. That night, CJ tosses and turns. He's just thinking about the cabin and what he's going to do. But by morning, he's got to get up and go to work, and he's still thinking about the cabin all through the day. It's just weighing on him. He doesn't know who to ask for help. By Sunday, he decides to go back to the neighbor, the one who had found the cabin 3 years before and would eventually give him the coordinates to it. And he's talking to him again, tells him what he finds, and he learns a little more history about the cabin. How the Forest Service had known about it and even been out there before.
I was telling you the guy who had taken pictures of the vehicle and all that. So they notified the Forest Service about it. And the Forest Service...
8 years ago.
Yeah, a while ago. And the Forest Service ranger at the time, LEO, went to the cabin, found it, documented it, said, okay, well...
And did it have child porn in at the time? No.
No.
It was just a cabin.
No, yeah, it was just a cabin. And when my friend had went there 3 years prior, it was just a cabin. There was the pictures he had, nothing was illicit like that in there. So the Forest Service, I don't really know why. I assume probably just they figured it wasn't worth their time to pursue. And so they documented it, and that was that. And the fear was that, well, if we send this to the Forest Service again, do they have the type of staff on hand to deal with this? You know, they're stretched pretty thin. They only have, I think, you know, a couple of LEOs for this whole side of the forest over here. And I thought, okay, well, who do we contact instead? And so my friend suggested, well, why not contact King County Sheriff? And so the good news was, you know, I'd worked with Search and Rescue, which is run partially by King County Sheriff, for my entire time there. And so I had a contact there within the department. And so I drove up to the nearest place I could get cell phone reception, which was Trucktown. And I remember I was parked there in front of the Popeye's Chicken there. And I was on the phone. I felt really bad. It was a Sunday morning. You know, I was calling this guy I knew from Search and Rescue and saying, hey, sorry to bother you. I left him a message. He didn't answer. I was like, hey, you know, I'm sorry. It's Sunday morning. I'm sure you're off work. But this is what I found. Is there anything you guys can do to help? Can you send like a deputy out here? I'd be more than happy to take them down. I just want to get somebody's official's eyes on this so I don't have to worry about it anymore. And I'll never forget, I don't remember if I was starting to drive back or if I was still in the parking lot, but he called me back almost immediately and said, you found what? I said, yeah. You know, he said, oh my gosh, it's burned to the ground.
The guy CJ was talking to was joking, but there would be a bright spot.
There's a sheriff nearby who's out running laps at the middle school. I said, oh, great. And I thought, okay, great. Not only is he nearby, but he can run laps. So he's out there. He's fit.
He's physically fit.
Take him bushwhacking in, you know, down to where this is. No problem. And so that was, I thought, great. So he said, you know, wait where you are. He'll come to you. So he showed up. And so I took him down to the location.
That morning, Sunday morning.
So that'd been the 20th. I took him down. So we get to the site. He has, you know, evidence bags and, you know, he's got his gloves and everything. I remember he was just like, oh man, just burn it to the ground.
Yeah.
It was everybody's response is burn it to the ground. And he So I took him inside, and we were going to take down these pictures. They were big, by the way. They weren't small. They were large pictures.
So like 8 by 10? Or bigger than 8 by 10?
Bigger than those.
Oh my gosh. So that's like probably twice the size of it. Probably three times the size of an 8 by 10.
Probably at least twice the size of those pictures, yeah. You have over there.
Twice the size of that one picture?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Put them both together, kind of stacked together. I know at least one or two of the pictures were that large.
Oh my gosh.
Some of them were probably about that size. They're all different sizes, but they were all framed behind glass, everything. So they took a lot of care.
So right? Not only a lot of care, but that's like, how would you even get those size of pictures?
Yeah, they had to print them out somehow. The unfortunate thing was that these pictures were, and I missed this when we were first there, they were screwed into the wall. So they weren't just hanging. I couldn't just go up and take them down and take them out. We didn't have any screwdrivers on hand.
Because those framed photos had literally been mounted on the walls with screws, the sheriff's deputy asked CJ to return to the cabin with a screwdriver on a different day and then bring that evidence to the station.
Come back with some screwdrivers. You know, he said, call me if I'm available, I'll come with you. You know, if not, please come down with other people, get these pictures down, you know, use gloves, get them in bags. He's like, I'm based right in town. Just give me a call, I'll come grab them, we'll put them in evidence. It'll be great, it'll be fine. I said, okay, perfect. And I can hand everything off. Because my goal at this point was just to hand it off to the right people and
feel
not
good.
Have to worry about it.
Yeah, not feel good about it, but feel like you had done the right thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that was, at this point, that was my goal.
CJ left the cabin that day with the deputy, with plans to go back with friends. Those friends initially agreed to go with him, but then they had second thoughts.
I don't know exactly why. It probably wasn't something that they wanted to do, and I understand. For some reason, I also couldn't get a hold of that sheriff's deputy. So, I don't know if it was a week or 2 weeks later. Eventually, I was like, you know, see, this is where it gets kind of hazy. I don't remember if it was the end of November or the beginning of December, but I figured the snow's coming. This isn't particularly a low elevation area. It will get snow. And this road will turn to ice and I can't get back here for months. So I figured, okay, I need to get up here while I still can. The sheriff's deputy, I can't get in contact with him. Turns out he was on like an extended vacation for Thanksgiving. So he was gone. My friends that I originally went out there with, they were not, for various reasons, unwilling to or not wanting to go there. So I figured, you know what? I've got to go up there and do it myself. So I sat there. I charged my drills, my power drills, got them all ready to go, got some big heavy-duty trash bags, got some gloves, and made the decision to go there.
Now, in the beginning of the show, I really wanted to give you a sense of how wild this area could be and potentially dangerous. Given the sensitivity of the situation, it wasn't lost on CJ that it was absolutely possible that he could run into the person or persons who built and obviously maintained the cabin, which could be a very dangerous proposition for someone who is only armed with the idea of wanting to do the right thing. However, nothing was going to stop CJ from returning to that cabin and getting that evidence before it snowed, even though CJ knew the risks that this person had been there many, many, many times over the 8 years since he'd hauled in all that material piece by piece. Remember, that suspicious vehicle had been reported to the Forest Service 8 years before. Who knew what they'd be willing to do to protect the cabin and to keep his illicit secrets safe?
And so I went out there, I got out of the truck, you know, loading everything in my bag, on my backpack, you know, stuffed to the brim with stuff, and the bags and everything else. And I remember I tested my drill, and the drills I had been charging, they were dead. And I thought, oh man, I don't want to have to go back and charge these things, it's going to take a while. What happened here? So I took just a little hand screwdriver and enough bits, and I figured, okay. I think it was a Friday when I went out there. It was another Friday.
Just to give it some context, how long does it take at a normal trekking from vehicle to the... just to give a sense of how deep it is into the woods.
It would take probably, you know, because you're going up the trail itself. The established trail is not a big deal. Then you have to bushwhack down through the woods to get to it. 45 minutes an hour. So, you know, I was on a mission. I was not going to stop.
Let's talk about that mission just briefly. I can see by your face that you're like, did you feel like this was a burden? Like, this is like, now I'm stuck having to do this. You know, my curiosity, my wanting to do the right thing. And now
I didn't want to ever go back in this cabin again. And the fact that I was having to go back to it again was like, oh my God, I don't want to deal with it.
But what was your driving force to feel that, you said sense of duty?
Because if I didn't do this, no one else would. You know, when I was on the Olympic Peninsula and I was trying to go after the people cutting down the trees illegally, the tree poachers, it was a sense of duty. I took it very personally because I knew that if I wasn't going out and documenting these things and trying to stop them, no one else would. And you're right, it was a burden at the time, but it fell into my lap. You know, you have decisions in life, right? Where if given a difficult situation like that, you can either rise to the occasion and do the right thing, or you can just let it fall to the wayside and say, well, it's not my problem. It would have been very easy for me to say, you know, it's not my land, not my issue, pass the buck, whatever. But at that point, I felt like I needed for myself to have closure, but also to do the right thing. So even if, since my drills weren't charged and everything else, because the drills were charged, it would have been very easy, just zip, zip, zip right off the wall and get those things in the bag and get out of there. But they, you know, I had to do it. I had to do it.
CJ put on his heavy-duty gear. By this time, it was pouring down rain. It was cold and foggy, but none of that mattered as he entered the wilderness, running on fear and pure adrenaline. He just wanted to get the evidence and get out of there.
I need to hustle. Because this guy, he could be coming today. He could be coming while I'm here. Do I want to meet this guy on the trail? Do I want to meet him at his place while I'm taking stuff down? No. That's the last thing I want to deal with. So I went, I hustled. I really hustled to get down there. And when you're in rain gear doesn't breathe, right? So I was sweating.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I didn't drink enough water beforehand, so I could feel I was getting dehydrated. But I didn't stop. I had water in my bag, too. But I was like, you know what? I can't stop. I cannot stop for a second.
Well, yeah, because your adrenaline must have been just racing, pumping get there.
I was practically, you know, jogging to get there in enough time. So I got down to the site and I did. And, you know, like I said, the last thing I wanted to do was look at these images again. So I was working as fast as I could. I got all but two images out.
How many were up?
Was there six or eight? Something like that. Various sizes. I left two on the walls because one of them, the screws were starting to strip. And I didn't want to do any more damage. I figured, well, it'll stay here. The other one, I didn't have the bit for it. They used a different bit. And I thought, well, okay, you know, I'll leave this one too. But the rest I got. Mind you, these are large, heavy pictures. They're behind glass. They're wood frames, whole nine yards. They're very large. And I have these big industrial garbage bags I'm having them in. They're heavy. They're awkward. And I've got to go up a very steep section to get back to the main trail to go back to my truck, and I'm already dehydrated. I'm already like, I can't stop. And like I said, I was almost at like a jog, and had this thing slung over my back like some I always like to say it's like some like perverted Santa Claus, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, if I run into this guy on the trail, what is my explanation? Or anybody?
Yeah.
What, they got this giant bag with something very large in there. You know, what do I say? Oh, I was cleaning up. So I'm running through my mind, like, different excuses if I were to run anybody. I mean, it was a race against the clock in a way, right?
Yeah.
And so I was by myself, you know, outside from some emails I sent out. Nobody really knew where I was.
CJ bursts out from under the cover of the woods. He hustles up to his vehicle, opens the door, and then places those heavy-duty plastic bags filled with those big, heavy-framed photos. He puts them in the cab of his truck. Then, all the adrenaline gone, he's spent as he sits in his truck, giving himself a minute to let the reality sink in. He'd been so focused on the mission of getting that evidence, he hadn't really thought about what he was going to do with it once he got it.
What I found out later was, you know, the sheriff was on vacation, so the contact I had. So I thought, well, you know, I got to store it somewhere. Now I'm driving down the road with this thing. And I'm thinking like, oh gosh, what is somebody... So I had a shed at work where I kept my other evidence when I got things. And I stuck it at the back of the storage shed in the corner, and I kind of folded it over, made sure it was safe, and said, okay, God, I hope nobody messes with this. So I went and got a little note with some tape, and I wrote this thing, you know, do whatever you do, do not look inside this. And I stuck it on there, and I thought, well, if somebody comes in here, they're going to see that. They're absolutely going to look inside this. So I went ahead and told everybody in my office, hey, this bag is in there. Do not open it.
Yeah.
It is to be given to the sheriff, and plus you do not want to see what's in there. So do not touch it, do not open it, just leave it alone.
CJ called his contact at the King County Sheriff's Office. remember the deputy who'd been on vacation and so wasn't available to go with him back to the cabin?
Eventually, I was able to get in contact with the sheriff deputy I was working with. He said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I was gone. It was on vacation, blah, blah, blah. By the way, this has been elevated. This is going to be, you know, here's your contact at the FBI who's going to be coming and picking these up." And I thought, oh my God, the FBI is taking this on. I felt this such sense of relief. If anyone in the country has the equipment and capability to take care of this case, the FBI is it.
And did you feel some validation because you knew that it was important to do the work to get it out of there? I mean, that had to feel validating. Yeah. Like, yeah, I know what this was worth it.
Yeah, it absolutely was.
CJ passed along the coordinates to the FBI. He even offered to help them get back there. And come springtime, in April of 2017, they called in the favor.
So that spring, I coordinated with them. I expected, you know, a couple people. I said, hey, you can just hop in my truck. I'll take you down there. It'll be incognito. It'll be great. Gosh, I mean, the FBI showed up with like 16 people. It was incredible. They showed up with like the whole office. It blew me away. And I'll never forget this guy, the day that we had this happening. It was in the parking. They rendezvoused in the DNR parking lot. And we just got a new district manager. And she comes out and there's all these FBI guys standing around with me. She's like, is everything okay? You know, I was like, yeah, it's fine. It's great.
Yeah.
And I also remember there's this guy who steps out of his vehicle. One of the FBI folks. Just huge guy. Just absolutely built. And he steps out with a shotgun in his hand. I'm like, oh my God, this is real. You know? So I took them down convoy style with several vehicles down to the down to the parking area, and we all hiked in, and they had somebody waiting at the trailhead just in case, you know, just watching that, see if anybody was going to come in there. They had everybody else come down to with me. They had a SWAT team. They had all their collections, you know, folks to collect evidence. And I remember it was one of the coolest days of my career.
I bet.
It was.
I'm just sitting
unreal.
Here so happy for you because it's like you went through hell.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
So, and the FBI was fantastic. I can't sing their praises enough on this. They were absolutely great. Just the fact that they took it seriously too. I mean, they were just a pleasure to work with.
CJ had made clear to the agents that he would take them there, but he didn't want to go back inside. And after the FBI made entry into the cabin, as CJ watched from outside, he couldn't believe it when he heard that the evidence that he'd taken had been replaced.
The SWAT team sort of, you know, did their thing, made sure it was secure, and they opened it up. I remember after it was very serious. And after that point, they said, wow, this place is full of porn. I said, no, it's not. I took almost all the images out. I said, well, it's full of porn in here. I said, no way. I said, okay. Is it okay if I go up and look, stick my head in this once and look inside? Said, absolutely, come on up. So I went up, you know, the ladder under the little trap door and everything, poked my head indoors. All the pictures I took down during the wintertime had been replaced, and then extra ones had been added in. So during the winter, when I said, you know, the conditions were bad, so after I had taken all the pictures, or almost all of them, the guy who had been maintaining this cabin came back, realized, oh, I've been robbed, and instead of saying, well, that's crazy, you know, they found my illicit material and took it, maybe I'm in trouble, maybe I shouldn't be coming here anymore, they thought, well, I better fill it with more. So in the wintertime, they came back with these heavy, heavy pictures. They were all framed again, behind glass, whole nine yards, and put more up.
Agents seized a variety of evidence, including a mug, a sleeping bag, a toothbrush, and more. All of it was packed up and sent to the FBI lab at Quantico for DNA and fingerprint analysis. Meantime, CJ would tell FBI agents about the maroon Toyota Cruiser that an observant neighbor had started seeing 8 years before, and how that vehicle would always park at the trailhead that led in the direction of the cabin. If you'll recall, that neighbor had passed along the vehicle license plate to the Forest Service years ago, and they had gone and checked out the ferry cabin. But back then when they went there, it had just been a hidden gingerbread house. There was nothing criminal inside. On that day, CJ shared that license plate number with the FBI. And before they left the cabin that day, he helped them set up secretly placed surveillance cameras, hoping to capture footage of the suspect or suspects.
I remember one day I was out working. It was later that spring. I was helping build a bridge. And I heard this helicopter fly overhead and then come back. And I looked at my phone because I had all the search and rescue notifications. I would get them. and nothing came up. I thought, well, that seems kind of weird. Turns out it was the FBI coming back. They didn't want to hike in, so they flew in and dropped in to get the cameras from the helicopters. And so that was pretty cool. They were all pretty worn out. Even the big buff guy I was telling you about, he was pretty tired by the time I took them down there. So I think to go back there would just been easier. I think they had access to a helicopter to go ahead and just do that. And so I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And they said that they checked the cameras. They caught him on camera and caught the guy that was a suspect coming back with somebody back to the cabin. And I mean, at that point, the FBI ransacked the place. I mean, they absolutely ransacked it. So I can only imagine what would be going through his head when he came back there with his buddy and found the place just in pieces.
So that kind of proves your point that it probably was two people.
Probably.
The vehicle was tracked back to 56-year-old Daniel Wood, who lived in Mill Creek, which is about an hour's drive from the Snoqualmie Valley.
They had him on camera. They had his license plate. They figured out where he lived. It was in Mill Creek, and which is kind of far away. You know, of all the places that you, if you lived in Mill Creek, why wouldn't you go up Highway 2 or Mountain Loop Highway or somewhere like that that's a lot closer to build a cabin like this?
Mm-hmm.
Why go all the way down to King County and out I-90 to a random place next to some old growth trees to do that?
Because that's like a couple hours away then, right?
Oh, yeah. It would have been quite a trek to do that on the regular. So that's, I think, why he built where he did, is to be right next to these old growth trees.
The FBI surveilled the suspect's residence and would take a surreptitious DNA sample from his motorcycle handlebars, and from a discarded cup. When these samples were compared with the DNA profile obtained from the cabin, it was a match to 56-year-old Daniel Mason Wood. Based on this evidence, the FBI was able to obtain a search warrant for his home in February of 2018.
And so what they were looking for at that point was the pictures.
Yeah.
Also anything else incriminating, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And so they served the search warrant on his house, and they seized the material, and they said that they found thousands and thousands of images, including images that he had documented. I'd be actually curious to see this, but images of him, he had documented him building the building, the cabin. So it was pretty clear he had built it, and built it out there, and then several documented him building it.
Right, he was toast.
Wood was arrested and charged in March of 2018 with two counts of child pornography. In November of 2018, he pleaded guilty to possessing sexually explicit images of minors and would be sentenced to 9 months in jail and required to register as a sex offender.
I was told by the FBI. I remember I was driving from Olympia and I got a call and I pulled over on the side of the road on 18. They said, hey, just so you know, we arrested the guy. All the major news outlets are picking up on the story. You might be contacted. And sure enough, I had a whole media day down in Olympia for the DNR, at the DNR office, talking to the media about it.
And what was that like for you?
Unreal. You know, talk about weird days, right, at work. You know, from the FBI to that,
mm-hmm.
to just a media day where I was talking to all the major local news outlets and everything else about this whole story. And it went viral. It made international news.
And what were people's reaction to you?
People were pretty understanding and supportive, I think. There's been a lot of curiosity about it. It was the weird Absolutely. Curiosity of the time where it's like, wow, that's super strange. And then we kind of move on. And I was glad that I actually had the chance to tell my story of it and be able to put that out there. Because before, it was just what they had based on the report that the FBI had drawn up for the court.
The backstory of how you got there and stuff like that.
Right, because I lived it, but I think it was bizarre enough. You know, when I went into that field, I never in my life expected to do anything quite like that.
Who would imagine that they would find
something
like that?
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, there's a lot of, when you think about working in outdoor recreation or in the woods, doing that kind of work, it sounds great, right? But you never think about the weird stuff you could find.
Believe me, I've heard a lot of things and I'm actually surprised because of getting full circle to our original conversation. Like, I go out in the woods to go hiking. I don't go out in the woods to do creepy, weird stuff. And it sounds like it's people's interpretation of what the woods are to them.
Think about it. You know, you hear the stories about, before legalization, people would go out and build grow ops in the woods, and they would have like booby traps around them, right? That was the thing that happened all the time. Then you have the meth labs. That was the thing that happened all the time, including the Middle Fork. Then you had, people going out and hiding in the woods, living on the land. You know, that happens. Still happens today.
So do you know if it's still up?
No idea. You don't know what happened to the cabin. I know that the Forest Service said that once the investigation was over, they were wanting to destroy it, but I don't, which was my initial goal, was to have a thing destroyed. Yeah. But now I don't know what the status is. I don't know if they've taken any action there or not. I don't work there anymore.
Yeah.
So.
And you probably don't ever want to see it again.
Absolutely not.
Even though you probably are curious to know if it's still there.
I would be curious to know if it's still there, but I really don't. I have no desire. I know where it is, but I have no desire.
You know where it is.
I have no desire to go back there ever again. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And that wraps up another episode of Criminal Mischief with Carolyn and Brandon. Make sure to stick around for our bonus episode on the case up next. And as always, thanks for listening. From Cloud 10, Criminal Mischief is a Pie in the Sky production, recorded in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We're produced by Brandon Morgan and myself, music by Soundstripe. I'm Carolyn Osorio, your writer and host.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.